Good afternoon. Welcome to today's Cabinet meeting of Tuesday the 31st of May. Is there any apologies?
There's an apology from Vic Bourne.
And the order of business?
With regard to the order of business, members will be aware that there is an additional item being previously circulated in connection with the Fourth Estuary Local Flood Risk Management Plan 2016-2022, which is to be considered as item 6.5 on the agenda. However, there are two other items currently on the agenda which are being withdrawn from consideration at this morning's meeting. They are items 5.6 on the agenda, which is in connection with the Midlothian Small Grants Programme, and item 6.2 currently on the agenda, which is in connection with the Lothian Joint Health Protection Plan.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Is there an explanation for this, Mary?
Thank you. The Small Grants Programme should actually have come back to Council, so we erroneously put that on this Cabinet agenda. We were asked in December to report back to Council on an options for allocating the grants to our three most deprived communities, and we put that on here erroneously. It should really come back to Council. And the Lothian Joint Health Protection Plan, we publish our plan in alignment with the NHS plan, and at the moment the Health Board has not published their plan just yet, so we're waiting on further dates where they publish their plan and we put ours up simultaneously.
Thank you very much. Do you have any idea when the NHS will be publishing the plan?
Adele's here, who may be able to give you just a bit more information on this. That was I've given you the most up-to-date information from this morning.
Thank you, Chair. I had anticipated the plan would be released by NHS Lothian last week. I spoke to the consultant who is in charge of drafting the plan, and it is anticipated it will come out in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Many thanks. We can move on now to our own business. I have to remind my colleagues that today we are having another trial film, so posing isn't acceptable even if we're being filmed. And we can continue with the declarations of interest. If anyone has an interest, they can declare it just now or later. Thank you. And we can move now on to item 4, the minutes of the Cabinet of the 19th of April, for approval. Do my colleagues wish to approve this minute? Thank you very much. Moving on now to the public items. 5.1 is the Education Appointment Committee and of the 4th of May, and Mary Smith will take us through that. So we all agree with that, right? Okay, and the next one is the school session dates for the next academic year. Grace Vickers, thank you.
Thank you. This report to the Cabinet is about the setting of the school session dates for academic year 2017 and 18. We were tasked to see how closely we could align school session dates with surrounding local authorities, Edinburgh being one of the main local authorities. In the end, we had to write a letter to SNMCT because of a disagreement with the interpretation of the 195 days for pupils lying within the teacher leave year, which runs from the 1st of September until the 31st of August. The letter came back to say that indeed the 195 days in their interpretation does have to run between the 1st of September and the 31st of August. What we would like to do as a next step would be to refer this matter to the SNCT chairs, because we are aware that in leave year 2017-18, some local authorities are returning on the 10th of August, Edinburgh is returning on the 14th, but within the timescales that we have, we would need to return on Friday the 18th of August. So the report itself recommends to agree the school session start date for 2017-18 as Friday the 18th of August. However, to note that preferred school session dates will then be presented to June Council, but also to authorise officers to refer the matter now of permitting more or less than 195 working days for teachers to fall within the teacher leave year to the joint chairs of the SNCT for determination for 2018-19. I'm sure you'll agree that economically it would be good if all of the Edinburgh and the surrounding local authorities had the same holiday dates and the same start of the school session dates. So that's what we're trying to align, but we're not able to do that for 17-18, but our hope would be to refer the matter to 18-19.
Thank you, Bob.
Speaking as an ex-teacher, the holidays are incredibly important, and I can understand they will not be wanting to do more than the 195. I remember it used to be 200. However, I find some difficulty understanding the complexities. I understand it runs from August to the end of August and beginning of September. And so Edinburgh seemed to start back very early, but obviously we want to try and align these because so many people are working across border. Our staff live in Edinburgh and their children go to school in Edinburgh and so on and so forth. Obviously we want to agree the recommendations and hope that we can get round to getting this sorted out once and for all.
Thank you. So we're agreed with the recommendations. Grace.
Could I just clarify just one point within that? Teachers would never work more than the 195 days for an academic session. It's to do with where the leave year falls, so 190 days for pupils and 195 days for teachers. So it's not that we're asking for more days within the academic year.
Thanks. Bob?
It would seem easier if they made it run from a July to July or something like that, when everyone's on holiday in the time. That would seem quite simple. But going back to many years, just to show my age, when they raised the school leaving age, the legislation was all framed in Westminster then. And they forgot the fact that Scottish schools went back in August. And we got 2 weeks bonus holidays. It was wonderful.
I doubt that teachers are going to get that this time. Sorry. So we're all agreed on these recommendations, and then we can move on to 5.3, the mobile library service provision, a report by Kevin Anderson. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. This report to Cabinet's in respect of the relaunch of the mobile library service within Midlothian, and also to provide Cabinet with details of a new shared service agreement that we've entered into with East Lothian Council. The existing mobile library vehicle had required to be replaced, and that was purchased in 2015. This, however, also gave us an opportunity to review the provision and relaunch that service to better meet customer demand, also to review the routes and additional services that could be supplied. We did this through undertaking a customer survey through existing customers and the wider library membership base as well. The existing mobile route was identified in terms of the number of stops and demand across Midlothian. But during the period of our review, East Lothian Council had approached us to assess if a service could be provided to some villages across East Lothian to the west of the county, as they had recently withdrawn their mobile library service. As indicated in section 2.6, respective villages that we are able to serve have been detailed there, and a service level agreement has been developed between Midlothian Council and East Lothian Council, as in section 2.7. That new service began on the 23rd of May with additional stops in East Lothian commencing during this current week. We will be publicising the new mobile library service following the PIRDA period, so that will generate additional demands across both localities. The library also has been Wi-Fi enabled, so we're looking to future-proof the vehicle in terms of a digital access across the communities of Midlothian that it will serve, and Cabinet asked to note the content of the report.
Thank you very much. Bob Constable.
Thank you. Kevin, we have the new vehicle now. I saw two vehicles in Loanhead just the other week. So that was the old one and the new one. And were we disposing of the old one?
Yes, exactly. That's the position.
Thank you. Kelly?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for this report, Kevin. It's very welcomed. And I think it's a great example of cross-authority working as well. And I think it's a really good example to other departments. I particularly note the extra stops in my own ward as well. I'm sure that will be very welcome. So thank you very much. Happy to move the recommendations.
Thank you. Are we all agreed on the recommendations? Thank you. The next report is 5.4, National Employability Fund Programmes, Funding Reduction and the Impact in a Midlothian Context, by Mary Smith.
Thank you, Leader. I'll try and give a brief overview of the report, and then Annette is here who can answer further questions. The purpose of the report is to explain the changes in the employability programme, and this, along with historical income targets, has created a funding gap within the Lifelong Learning and Employability Service. There will be a direct reduction in the number of young people and adults achieving a positive destination, and this report puts forward potential options to mitigate some of the impact. Section 2.1, the Skills Development Fund, the last paragraph, has been reduced by 40% nationally due to the funding settlement. This has traditionally funded programmes where trainee allowance is paid over 13 weeks, where the work is carried out to increase qualifications. Over recent years, the time period for working with trainees has reduced from 26 weeks to 13 weeks, and this reflects a reduction in funding over time. In section 2.2, the second paragraph shows that for the local authority area of Midlothian, there were 221 employability fund places for 14-15. This was reduced to 214 in 15-16 and 124 for 16-17. At the contract award decision-making in 16-17, these places were awarded to a variety of third public and private sector providers. Lifelong Learning and Employability had 70 places in 15-16 for Midlothian and 35 for East Lothian. For 16-17, we've been awarded 0 places for Midlothian and 8 for East Lothian. At the time of writing the report, the funders who have successfully secured the contract to deliver Midlothian have not been released, and Annette can fill you in on that one. Historically, Midlothian 2.4, historically Midlothian had income targets from contracts that we received, and over the 20 years we've not reduced the income target. There's been a significant reduction from approximately 25 staff to 10 members of staff, with no corresponding reduction in the income target. So in order to manage and realign income targets over the last two financial years, the management team have reduced the actual and budgeted expenditure to offset an unachievable income targets. This has bridged the gap by £207,000. I'll take you to section 3.1, and the table at the bottom summarises the position so far. The income target for 16-17 is £536,000. The confirmed income is £157,000. The additional reduction in expenditure across lifelong learning employability is £147,000, and the single-year income is £70,400. So in this section, we'll have a projected overspend of £162,000. The risk section sets out that there are concerns here in terms of our young people. There'll be 90 less young people on paid local trainee programmes. And we attempt to reduce this risk by offering 25 young people a place on the paid trainee programme funded by reprofiling the Developing Young Workforce funding. So, as I say, Annette can fill you in on the greater detail, but if I take you to the recommendations on Section 5, Cabinet is recommended to note the target of £536,000 for lifelong learning is unachievable due to the combination of the historic income targets and the reduction in the employability fund contracts. recognise the continued negative impact of funding and service reductions for the equality groups. Note that the funding and delivery of paid trainee programmes for 25 young people by realigning developing young workforce funding and support lifelong learning service to undertake mitigating actions to support those at risk and raise awareness of the associated issues through COSLA and other mechanisms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bob?
Yes, thank you, Mary. This is just another example of savage Westminster cuts affecting vital services in Scotland. All I can do is praise the efforts of, well, either the Scottish Government and our own people for trying to mitigate these. In noting to the recommendations, it really comes to our point of view, from our point of view as elected members, to raise the awareness through COSLA and so on of the gap that is caused by this savage cut. I look forward to hearing further details.
Thank you very much. Any of my colleagues wish to ask any further questions? Thank you very much. Then we can move on to 5.5, an update on Midlothian residential houses, and this is another report by Mary Smith.
Thank you, Leader. You'll be aware that under the Children and Young Persons Act, that young people are entitled to ask for care up to, well, they're entitled to care up to 21 and entitled to ask for support up to 25. And this report outlines how we plan to use additional funding to support our young people in residential care. So Section 2 sets out really the parts of the Act that I've discussed, and the financial implications that we got a bit of extra funding from the Scottish Government in order to support our young people. What we're looking at, Section 5.4, we're looking at a core and cluster approach of using our three residential units, and that is using a flat in Mayfield through Melville Housing and the residential home at Lady Bray and Gore Bridge to work with our young people 16 to 18. And that's having the younger children residing in Woodburn Court and Dalkeith and Pentland Way. If you imagine, you've got a range of youngsters in care from 12 to 18 or 12 to 21. You wouldn't want a 12-year-old in the same home, same care home, as a youngster at 18 who legally can go out and drink or, you know, have friends or whatever. So what we're trying to do is prepare these youngsters for independent living. So by using the home at Lady Bray, the youngsters can use Borders Rail, the bus service, you know, to get to town quicker in terms of jobs, college and whatnot. And then it leaves the other two units for our younger people. We can't predict the increase in the young people who want to stay put in care, and it's really important that the youngsters have the option. They also have the option to leave care and come back, because many of our youngsters get to 16 and say, I want out of here, I don't want anything to do with you. But we all know that youngsters need support. You know, our own children are on elastic bands and they keep coming back. And it's the same with our care youngsters. Our care experienced youngsters should have that same opportunity to come back and ask for support. So the resource implications shows how we're going to use additional funding for a through care and aftercare team, and also how we're going to use our resources. So it's requested that Cabinet just note the content of the report meeting the requirements of the Children and Young People Scotland Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Yes, thanks, Mary, for this report. I think the idea of children being thrown out at 16 is terrible, and I really welcome what the government are doing by making it the thing on. As Mary says, we're all parents ourselves, some of us, and well, your children can be in their 40s and still needing support sometimes. So I really think from the corporate point of view, it is good that they, and I particularly welcome what you said about them maybe at 16 wanting to break free and get the chance to come back, for they will need it. And the support up to 26, well, it is to be welcomed. Now, another actor, particularly part of this report, particularly welcome is in 5.4. It's the imaginative use of our buildings, as they say, separating out the ages. I was very pleased to hear that, and I think it will be a very good effect. So all in all, a very positive support, and very happy to note it.
Thank you very much. We all accept these recommendations. Yes. Thank you. And then moving on to the public items, 6.1, the creation of a Pan-Scotland local authority business plan, and we're going to be taken through by Ian Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. The Council's been making regular loans to small and medium-sized local companies for many years. And in fact, since 2010, the Council's been part of the group known as the East of Scotland Investment Fund, dispersing loans to local companies of up to £50,000. And over that time, since 2010, some 15 or 16 loans totalling over £500,000 have been dispersed. Generally speaking, very successful in enabling businesses to start up and grow, providing new jobs. There's also the issue of managing debt, but that has been managed. And indeed, a further report in relation to progress on the ESIF, or East of Scotland Investment Fund work, is due to be reported up to Council at the end of next month. This is a report that updates on the creation of a single or pan-Scottish local authority business loan fund. That's all 32 local authorities involved. So it brings together the East of Scotland Investment Fund and the West of Scotland Investment, or West of Scotland Loan Fund, rather, which has been operating for longer than the one in the East. But it brings them together. They will no longer exist. It'll be a single Scottish one, which is very much in line with the way the Scottish Government is wishing to take this forward. The new scheme itself would run from later this year, no July at the earliest, but probably later in the year. There's been the establishment of a shadow board to oversee this as part of the governance structure, and that board's approved a new business plan for 2016 to 2018. And you'll see in paragraph 2.8 of the report the highlights of that and the most significant elements of that are just laid out for you. For Midlothian, the total fund would be £485,000, to which we could add a further £140,000 from a currently fairly dormant business loan fund, one that became dormant really when ESIF came into force back in 2010. So taking us up to over £600,000 of a fund. That enables us to, or the Council, to leverage additional monies more effectively as well. I must stress, that money is ring-fenced to Midlothian Council, so it's for this Council to decide on how that money is spent in terms of supporting local businesses with loans, but there is no money to be paid out with Midlothian of that £600,000 into the wider area. The governance arrangements are set out in the report and are, in my view, straightforward and can be supported. Therefore, the recommendations at the end of the report are in line with what I've outlined. John Beveridge is here, who's well-versed in all of this and can take any detailed questions. Otherwise, Chair, recommend the recommendations at 4.1 to Cabinet.
Thank you very much, Ian. Jim?
Thank you, Chair. John, just a couple of questions. This loan tends to be higher risk than people going to banks because they can't get money from banks there. In paragraph 2.9, we're talking about loans of 50 and 100,000. That seems a wee bit high to me. Would you like to comment?
Yeah, the £100,000 will just be in exceptional circumstances, but what the Scottish Government have tried to do, they've tried to get this set into three different levels, so it's 0 to 25,000, and there'll be a provider of funding up to that level, and then there's 25 to potentially 100,000 is like your second tranche of funding for company support, and then 100,000 and above. So 100,000 is the maximum ceiling, and that would just be in really exceptional circumstances. It's reckoned that the usual figure would be about the 50,000, but we've had to set like a ceiling as a potential sort of top level for business funding.
And when does this all kick off, do you know?
It's been under discussion now for well over a year, but we're getting to the sort of conclusion time now. The tender has been final tender submission date's the 31st of May, and they're still aiming for the fund to be operational for the 1st of July. That's the target date that we're working on.
OK, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Any more questions? Are we happy to endorse these recommendations? Thank you. And then we can move on to the next item, 6.3, Environmental Health Food Service Plan 2016-17. And again, that will be Mary Smith. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. This is to advise the Cabinet of the Environmental Health Food Service Plan for 2016 and to recommend the approval of the plan. Section 2 sets out the background of the plan, and Section 2.3 shows that an appendix is attached which gives an overview of the service performance against the 2015-16 Food Service Plan. There are no resource issues arising from this that cannot be met within the existing budget. And we have a statutory requirement with regards to this plan and the functions within it. In terms of the recommendations, it's recommended that the Cabinet approves the Environmental Health Food Service Plan 2016-17. And Adele is here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. There is one question I had to ask, and one is a clothes retailer having a licence to have food, and I wondered about that, but mostly I wanted to say that this plan does play a very important part in our public health, and it aims to keep everybody healthy and safe in Midlothian, and as well as that, Midlothian is a great place to eat. I know that from experience.
Thank you. I'll just comment on the first part of your point in terms of the clothes retailer. The legislation requires that food businesses include anything which sells or provides food. So if, for example, a clothes retailer has it's their principal function, but they maybe have a small cafe in the corner, or indeed sell pre-packed, ready-made foods, they are obliged to register, and that's why they feature in our statistics.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Are we happy to accept these recommendations? Thank you very much. And moving on to 6.4, the inspection of New Byres Care Home, and this is a report by Alison White.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the report is to summarise the outcomes from an unannounced inspection which was carried out by the Care Inspectorate at New Byres Care Home Village in April 2016. The findings of the recent inspection awarded New Byres grades of 3s and 1-4, the 4 being for management and leadership. And the inspectorate had reported that the service had worked very hard since the previous inspection, where you're aware that we had received some poor grades at that point in time, and that there were clear plans to continue to make improvements. The inspection did note a couple of particular strengths, particularly that the service provided a comfortable, clean environment with some good shared and private areas, that the residents looked comfortable and at ease within the home and with the staff team that was supporting them, and that residents spoke very positively about the care and support that they received. There was praise also for the quality of the home and the quality of meals. And the inspection team at the time that they were in visiting had seen a calm and organised approach to the resident care, and staff didn't appear unduly rushed at that point in time and were offering assistance to residents at a pace that was appropriate for them as individuals. They did highlight further work that was needed to fully implement all of the aspects from the previous review, but an action plan was in place for those, and a further action plan has been developed to take forward to the next level the comments from the previous report. There is a project board. This was established in January 2016, which is chaired by the Joint Director to ensure that all of the transformational work around New Byres continues to be maintained, and we see the pace of change that we're wanting to ensure positive outcomes. So Cabinet is being asked to note the content of the inspection report and acknowledge the improvement since the previous inspection and the ongoing work by the management and staff connected with New Byres Care Home.
Thank you very much. There has been a huge improvement in the grades and an enormous amount of work carried out, and thank you very much to everyone who's been involved in that. But I'm still looking for assurances that this improvement is sustainable and that we will achieve the further improvements requested.
I think we have a new management team in place. We are currently consulting on a new staffing structure, which will help us embed further some of those changes and that take on board some of the comments from the Care Inspectorate, which is particularly around a clarity of the roles for the staff group themselves. Certainly looking at the introduction of nurses as part of that to ensure that we have a really strong clinical governance around the care and support and a strong management team in terms of the support. So I think some of the changes that we're making will help us embed that. And I think the transformation team work that we've got, we will continue for a period of time until we are really confident that we have that strong management structure in place that can take that forward. So it is a high priority for us within our directorate, and we continue to have very close scrutiny of the service to ensure that we meet the requirements and exceed the requirements of the Care Inspectorate, because actually the Care Inspectorate are giving us what they want us to achieve as a minimum, but actually we want to set those standards much higher than that in terms of delivering outcomes for the residents.
Thank you very much. Jamie?
Just one thing I'd like a bit of encouragement on. Paragraph 2.5, where the inspectors noted that we could do better in the following areas, and one of them is the management of medicines. Now, how serious is that?
There have been some issues and concerns around the recording, so the signing of a member of staff who's done that. What I would say is the issues that we've had with signing, we've been monitoring that very closely and have been getting weekly reports in terms of the number of missed signings. So there hasn't been any indication that somebody hasn't received a medication. It has been around whether a member of staff has signed for it. When we've analysed that further, it appears that the missed signings have more been around topical medications or creams. So actually, if someone's receiving a tablet or oral medication, that is being signed for. But if someone has a cream for eczema or something like that, that is not always routinely being signed for. We've been getting external audits from Omnicare, which is the pharmacy that provides services for us, and they have been auditing the medication management in each of the streets. The reports for the last week, they did two streets in a lot of detail, came back as being excellent in terms of the quality of management for that. So it has been an issue, but we have been really closely addressing that. Where we've seen particular issues with a member of staff, we've taken them off doing medication if we've had concerns. And for some of the areas, we've ensured that that's become a management responsibility to do that. So we're confident that there's that we've done everything that we can to address that. I would say if you went anywhere, there will be the odd occasion where a member of staff will miss-signing. It's not unusual to new buyers, but we are doing everything we can in new buyers to address the issue.
Thanks. I was thinking more of someone getting their own medicine. That's what I was thinking.
No, that isn't the issue within it. It was around the missed signing of medication, but obviously if someone has missed signing for something, it's difficult without doing an audit of the medications to know they've definitely done it. So missed signing could result in an error, but there has been no evidence of there being somebody either getting the wrong medication or the medication at the wrong time.
Thank you very much. Are my colleagues happy to the recommendations? Thank you very much. And now moving on to private items. Members of the public. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not private items. I've missed out the fourth estuary local flood risk management plan. And that's going to be a report by Ricky. I'm terribly sorry.
Thanks, Leader. Yeah. This report provides information with regards to the Council's first local flood risk management plan, and it covers the period July this year to June 2022. It follows on from a requirement of the Flood Risk Management Scotland Act, which seeks to promote a proactive approach to flood risk management. The Council itself has been working in partnership with, amongst others, SEPA, Scottish Water and neighbouring local authorities. And SEPA has built on the work that has been carried out and published the Flood Risk Management Strategy for Scotland. Within that strategy, it identifies 14 local plan districts. And as I say, this Council is one of 13 neighbouring local authorities within the 4th Estuary Local Plan District. In terms of the plan, the Council has entered into a memorandum of understanding with its partners, and that's in relation to the preparation of the 4th Estuary Local Flood Risk Management Plan, and that sets out the documents and the willingness of the parties to publish a plan by the 22nd of June this year. Within that plan, for the fourth estuary local plan, Edinburgh City Council has been nominated as the lead authority. Under 2.10, the actions in the local flood risk management plan have been identified, and there's a number, and one that would be no kind of surprise to members is work that's required around the Lasswade and New Battle corridor. That essentially is the one significant area, if I can call it that, where it's considered that that work should progress. So the resource implications are set out in 3.1 of the report, and essentially at this stage there's no significant resource issues for the Council to consider. So I would turn to Section 4, the recommendations, and ask the Cabinet to adopt the Fourth Estuary Local Flood Risk Management Plan with a view to agreeing the various subsets in A, B and C. If there's any detailed questions, my colleague Alan Heatley has been Midlothian Council's representative in terms of taking the Fourth Estuary Local Plan forward. So if there's any detailed questions, Alan will be able to address these.
Thank you very much, Derek.
Well, thanks, Leader. And thanks, Ricky. I think we're probably sort of reasonably fortunate at the moment. You know, we have had the big issue down at Lasswade a few years ago, but apart from that, I don't think there's been any real big issues. Our main problem seems to be, as I say, the watercourses and that running through the towns and villages, certainly in Pennycook, coming off the Pentlands and that. But I've got to say that when there is action required, that the council has dealt with it and got out there, and you know, it's mainly rubbish and debris all coming down, blocking them up, and then it comes onto the roadways and things, and the houses have been affected. But the council have reacted and tried to keep them clear as much as possible. So, yeah, I think the plan's necessary, and as I say, welcome it. Forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Yes, just a local question about the work at Poulton Village that's recently been completed. That comes under that flood prevention too, because I had complaints of the garage areas there flooding, but hopefully that's all going to be sorted now. It looks like it's been well done.
Yeah, essentially there's more than just the kind of the management of the river network and the issues that pertain to that. There's also surface water drainage is an issue as well that's addressed as part of this. Not necessarily right at the start, but it is part of the plan. So all kind of aspects of flooding, whether it be from river or from surface water drainage, would be addressed.
Just sticking to my local patch, the weir at Poulton has collapsed in the last few weeks, and the water level is noticeably lower at the bridge and in the village, so that would be great there. Will that cause a bigger impact maybe down at the village of Lasswade?
Yes, we're aware of the collapsed weir situation, and that's been looked at by some of our environmental colleagues. We don't think it's going to have any impact at all at Lasswade. And in fact, we've been looking at the bridge as well, just to make sure that there's not any scouring effects or any damage done upstream from where the weir is. So it's really just a case that, you know, we're keeping an eye on it and we'll monitor the situation as it develops.
Thank you very much, and that concludes our business for today. Thank you very much for your attendance.